the Scotiabank Saddle Dome to Rogers Arena to Madison Square Garden and everywhere in between. We are on the NHL Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
So just how impressive was that last night for the Pittsburgh Penguins? With their season on the line, Sidney Crosby and the Penguins, let's be honest, stepped up big time. They were better than Tampa, I thought, from start to finish, en route to a 5-2 win in game number 6.
We know the circumstances. I think you go out there with the mindset of, you know, playing desperate, and I think it's pretty natural when you're in this situation, and I think we have confidence in the whole group, you know, no matter who it needs to be to step up. I think everyone played great tonight.
Yeah, the Penguins just were the better team last night. And even though Jonathan Drouin looked to have scored to make it 1-0 early on, I thought even at that
stupid
point.
Stupid offside rule.
Yeah, it was the right call.
I know, but it's still stupid.
Well, get the call right. I'm all for getting the call right, especially if they missed the call on the ice. And Pittsburgh was the better team to that point. Drouin scored, got called off. Then Pittsburgh got their 5-on-3. I felt really bad for Victor Hedman because he shot the puck over the glass from his own end to the other end of the ice. And that's going to happen 1 in 100 times. But they cashed in on the 5-on-3. They kept on coming in the second period. Another goal in the final minute of a period for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were up 3-0 after 40 minutes of play. And then, yeah, Tampa pushed, but it was too little too late. I thought, hey, if you were a Penguins fan, you wanted to see your team play urgent and desperate, and you wanted to see your top players step up, and that's exactly what happened. They did play urgent. Kessel scored. Malkin had a point. Letang scored. Crosby had the winner and a couple of points. Like, that was exactly what you wanted to see if you were a Pittsburgh Penguins fan last night.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the way that, especially you had some of your bigger players, you know, scoring goals. Crosby, I thought, was unbelievable last night. He scored the game winner to make it 3-0. And, you know, Pittsburgh just seemed like from the opening faceoff, like they were going to force a game 7 if they, you know, if anything stopped them, it was going to have to be the lights getting turned off in the building, because mm-hmm. they were that good last night. And give them a lot of credit, because this certainly is a series that should go 7 games. It is going to go 7 games. And, you know, now the way things have happened, Pat, you thought the Lightning were dead and gone when the Pittsburgh Penguins won game 3 to take a 2-1 series lead. Then you thought the Penguins were done. Lightning won game 5 to take a 3-2 series lead. But now here we are for do or die game 7. And because of having both teams already countered out once, it's kind of hard to predict what's going to happen tomorrow's game 7.
Well, and I like the point you make, because I'm with you. I think that this series has been close enough that it deserves a game 7. Like, you've had a couple of more lopsided games. Like, you had a 5-2 game, and you had a lopsided game 4 and that type of stuff. But for the most part, this has been a pretty close series, and a series that deserves to go the distance. And I know a lot of people kind of thought that, oh, wow, the Penguins are on the ropes. They're coming back for game 6 in Tampa, being down 3-2. But the way Tampa won game 5, it's not like they did it in dominant fashion. In fact, they're pretty fortunate to come out of that game,
like,
with a win, right?
You know, if Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't play that game, not to knock him or anything, but if Matt Murray goes in there and plays anything like he did last night, this series might already be over. Like, we might have the Pittsburgh Penguins talking about them in the Stanley Cup final today, because, you know, you look at that game 5, you're right. I'm not really sure Tampa deserved to win that, but they end up winning it, and here we are getting set for a game 7.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I thought game 6 had the potential of going Pittsburgh's way. And now they go back for game 7 back in Pittsburgh, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. But I think this thing really is wide open, and I think that, you know, the series to this point has deserved a seventh game. And yeah, I thought Pittsburgh was, look, I thought Tampa pushed in the third period and Brian Boyle scored the goals, and that's what happens. You're down 3-0, and it kind of, that's the way it goes, you know. But from the drop of the puck till the end of the second period, that was Pittsburgh's game. That was a game that they controlled, I thought, from start to finish. They deserved to be up 3-0, and that was exactly the type of effort you would have wanted if you're a Penguins fan, knowing that your team's season was on the line. As we welcome you back to the big show, he's Will, I'm Pat. Matt Rose is on the board today, and we are well underway. We've got game 6 of the Western Conference Final tonight at 7 o'clock between the Sharks and the St. Louis Blues. Lots to talk about that as the afternoon continues as well. Well, I got to say, though, didn't know how Matt Murray was going to respond. Didn't know if the Penguins goaltender was going to be able to bounce back in a, you know, real meaningful way. He did. I thought he was really, really strong last night. You know, I thought Tampa's chances were kind of few and far between to the first 40 minutes of play. Let in the two goals in the third period, but I thought he shut the door. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised because he's been as focused and as airtight and as good as he's been so far in the postseason. But you get pulled in game five, most important game of the team's season to that point, and he's not playing. And in comes Marc-Andre Fleury, and then they go back to Matt Murray. It was a valid question to ask, okay, well, how's he going to react? Is he going to be the type of guy that can withstand that and be fine and good to go for game number six? Well, I think he proved that and then some. He was very, very strong last night. Didn't steal the game. Wasn't incredible. Just was focused and strong like he needed to be to give his team a chance to win.
See, in your notes, you have him as 21 years old. I was really hoping you were going to say it because, like, no, he's 22. He turned 22 today.
I forgot. I just forgot.
No, that's fine.
22 today.
It's his birthday today. He's 22 years old. But you're right. I mean, for a guy that young, I don't know if he's going to have the mental state of mind to be able to bounce back and respond after, you're right, getting yanked and not getting the nod in your team's most important game to date. And he ends up bouncing back and playing really well. And I give him credit because in the post game, he was asked about that and he didn't want to throw anyone under the bus, said, hey, look, I'm just going to play my best game when my name is called. That was the case tonight.
Yep.
And that's what I did, made 28 saves. So, give him a lot of credit. He's certainly showing, you know, a lot of maturity past his years right now. And he looks like a guy who's been in the NHL for 10 years and kind of quite the story for Matt Murray, really, Pat. I mean, you look at his junior numbers and more proof why goaltenders are so hard to predict, because his numbers in junior were never really that good. He had a good final year in Sault Ste. Marie, but for the most part, since turning pro, Matt Murray's really exploded. But, you know, until he was, you know, 20, 19 years old,
yeah,
never really was much. And it was always kind of a tall kid, but pretty lanky. And you know, Peter Laborde has referred to that again today, saying he's probably about 150 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, he's not a big guy. And he's, it is another, as you say, another example of why projecting goaltenders is the hardest thing to do, because, you know, guys who get taken in the first round don't pan out one way, and guys who get taken much later on all of a sudden burst onto the scene. And you know, there's a lot of people who are, you know, getting more and more on board with, you know, maybe you don't take goalies really early because it really is a crapshoot. I mean, Mason McDonald and Thatcher Demko were both taken a couple of years ago in the early stages of a draft in the early second round. And I'm not saying either are going to pan out, but you have no idea. I have no idea what Mason McDonald is going to turn into for the Flames or Thatcher Demko for the Vancouver Canucks. And I don't think anybody knew this was going to happen for Matt Murray. Yeah. I think the Penguins are probably as surprised by this as we are. And they drafted him. They knew there was some potential, but for him to burst onto the scene like this, usurp Marc-Andre Fleury, who's been their number one goaltender for, you know, really the better part of a decade at this point, he's been their number one goaltender, and for him to do it at the age of 21 and now 22 years old, like, that's something that you didn't see coming. And it's why I'd be leery if I'm the Penguins of investing too much in Murray beyond this year to say, nope, we've got our guy, he's our number one, because we've seen young goaltenders burst onto the scene and then take a little bit of a step back and not be able to be exactly what they were in the postseason. It's tough to be a 60, 65 game a year goaltender. And I know everybody's pointing to Marc-Andre Fleury. They're going to get rid of him. They're going to trade him. And that salary, maybe they'll be forced to if there's a market for him. But
you're not as sold, eh?
I just don't think that if you're the Penguins, and we don't know if they're going to win the Stanley Cup or not, and I think they've got a decent chance of winning a Stanley Cup next year as well. But if you're the Penguins and you want to keep that championship window open, I don't think that you can be 100% confident going into next year that Matt Murray is going to be able to carry the number one workload for you as a 22-year-old. And that's why, as much as he's been great in the postseason, and as much as he might be your day one starter next year, having a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury in the fold and to have a guy who you know has proven to be a number one goaltender, if you don't have to trade him and you're not getting a ton of value in potential deals that are out there, I'm not anxious to pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, and again, going back to the projection thing, like when a guy is 21 years old, you don't even know what he's going to be 5 years down the road. So you're right. It's not maybe as cut and dry as some people are making it out to be when you come on a decision of what to do with your two goaltenders in Pittsburgh. I still think there is a potential they trade Marc-Andre Fleury. Maybe I'm more in that camp than you are.
Mm-hmm.
But
Don't get me wrong. I think there's a chance they trade him.
Right.
There's a
but you're saying
potential
it's
expansion
hard.
Draft and all of that.
You're also saying, though, that it could be some danger when you're, you know, judging off a small sample
exactly.
size.
Exactly. That's more the...
It's higher risk than if you were to, okay, Matt Murray's been here for 4 years. It's kind of time to give him the ball. He's played about 30 games a year.
This is not Corey Schneider and Roberto Luongo, right? This is...
Well, they made the right call there, too.
They traded both guys, I believe. Now, they did get Bo Horvat. Oh. And Bo Horvat's a pretty good player.
What else did they get? Sean Mathias? Jakob Markstrom?
And Markstrom was all right for him last year. I mean, he's not as good as either Luongo or Schneider. That's granted. But Bo Horvat's a good player. Anyway, we don't need to pile on the Vancouver
Canucks. Sorry, I got sidetracked. You said Corey Schneider.
They're in a bad enough shape as it is. But yeah, like this is not Schneider Luongo. This is not Schneider, you know, finally pushing the established number one out. This is a
not
guy
even
who's,
Price Halak to an extent.
No. This is a guy who's gotten really hot. And I'm not saying Matt Murray's not going to be a number one goaltender because I think he very much has the chops and ability to be a number one goaltender. I'm just not ready to invest everything if I'm the Penguins and say, no, you're our guy. You're playing 60 games next year because he has not proven that he can play 60 games. It's the same thing with Thomas Greiss and Jaro Halak in New York. I'm not saying Jaro Halak is one of the best goaltenders in the NHL and elite class or anything like that, but he can give you 915, 920 save percentage goaltending over 55-60 games. Thomas Greiss has never proven to be able to do that.
That's
why I'm not ready to just put all of my stock into Matt Murray. And maybe they trade Fleury and they bring in somebody else who can play 30, 35 games if need be next year. Maybe that's the way they go about it. I guess I just wouldn't be so eager to anoint somebody number one without even, you know, actually seeing how a more extended period of time goes for him.
There certainly is a ton of risk in doing that, and we'll see what happens this summer with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but you're right. There might be a little bit more hesitation from Jim Rutherford. If he looks at some other teams that have done that with young goaltenders, it might not always lead to the greatest path to success. You might have to take some more time and look what happens. And again, Pat, I think this all does play a factor when you're talking about the expansion draft too, and what, you know, if we find out next January there is an expansion draft coming up next May, there could be something else going on, right?
Yeah, and the expansion draft might put the accelerator on everything. So that
it might make teams to make decisions they don't want to make.
Exactly, and if we find out, you know, in the next month, it probably would be in the next month. If we find that out that there's going to be an expansion draft, then yeah, Anaheim and St. Louis and Tampa and Pittsburgh might have to jam on the accelerator for some of these moves. But you know, I think it's important for the Penguins to not put too much into a really nice run here because we've seen young goaltenders burst onto the scene and then not be able to carry it over into a regular season. So here we are, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final goes tomorrow. Pittsburgh has done the job to get it back to their building. They fought all year to have a nice spot to be able to play Game 7 in their building, and now they've got it. I thought Pittsburgh had the ability to win Game 6. I thought they had another win in them, but I don't know how to call tomorrow night. And that's the best spot to be in, to not have a feel one way or the other going into a seventh and deciding game. I think that's the way you want it because this series has been so close. These two teams are so evenly matched. Yeah, Pittsburgh's on home ice, but Tampa was in a Stanley Cup final last year. They're the team that has been there most recently. So I could honestly see tomorrow night going any given way. I don't really see a favorite. I don't see one team that I'm putting more money on. I'm pretty excited for what should be a pretty tight and close Game 7. Although, the last time we thought that, we had two absolute stinker Game 7.
Couple of duds.
Knock on wood, that's not the case.
I should just quickly mention, I was going to ask you, you brought it up, and how much do you think home ice advantage is a real factor in these playoffs? Because you look at it, and NHL released a stat yesterday, 42 wins already by road teams in these playoffs, just 38 of them last year. So it's becoming more even. They're 42-41 in 83 games in these playoffs are road teams. So I don't know, Pat, is home ice advantage a real thing these days?
I mean, I think you'd rather have Game 7 in your building. I think that you'd just rather be in your home building with your home fans and
for sure,
and that comfort level. You'd like to have that in Game 7. Otherwise, I don't know how much of a home ice advantage there really is at this point in the NHL. I still think you'd rather play at home, and you go take a look at regular season records, by and large. You know, the Sharks and a couple of other teams are exceptions, but by and large, every year, home records are better than road records. It's just it's not necessarily because you're playing in front of hostile crowds, you're intimidated, or because the boards bounce anyway. It's because there's more challenges being on the road in that, you know, you don't have your full training staff and you know, you're playing with more fatigue, you're traveling, there's all that type of stuff. You're playing more on back-to-back nights, so there's just more, and there's the last change, as somebody points out, there's also last change that you get.
Well, I think that's probably the biggest advantage right now when you're talking about the National Hockey League, especially in the playoffs, when you talk about matchups and people like to match lines. I mean, when you're the home team, you get that opportunity to, you know, have the last change and get the matchup you want out there all the time.
But for Game 7 tomorrow, I don't see last change playing as big of a role as this series.
But a Game 1 and Game 1 and 2 and a Game 3 and 4 does play.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, but not in a Game 7 when it's a one-game, you know, showdown. Last change certainly means something, but I don't know if it's the be-all, end-all.
These two teams are so evenly matched. They're so depth-wise. I think they're so evenly matched that last change plays a less crucial role, I think, between Pittsburgh and Tampa than it would be in potential other matchups. But look, Tampa's won twice already in Pittsburgh, so I could absolutely see them winning again. Same way Penguins come back. I really could. Like, usually you have some sort of a feel. You're like, I think this team's going to win. No idea. Happy to say I've got no idea as to what happens tomorrow. There's been a good series so far, and hopefully Game 7 ends up being good. You take a look at the Game 7s. I mean, Nashville went into Anaheim, won on the road. What else? St. Louis went into Dallas, won on the road in Game 7. Like, we've seen Game 7s won on home ice. We've seen them won on the road. I don't think that where the game's being played tomorrow specifically is going to play a huge part in how this ends up playing out. Game 7, by the way, tomorrow, 6 o'clock in Pittsburgh. Penguins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll have it for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Same way Sportsnet 960 The Fan has for you $40,000 in backyard renovations. It is one of the best prizes we've ever put together on this station. It's the Sportsnet 960 Backyard Reno, as we're teaming up with City Green Landscapes. They are experts in outdoor transformation. So this $40,000 of landscaping includes outdoor lighting, an unbelievable paving stone patio. You've got the fire kit. You've got the four-zone irrigation. They're doing trees, they're doing shrubs, they're doing perennials, they're going to do the sod, garden mix, they're going to do the mulch, a water feature, you're going to have a green, your grass is going to be as green as can be, you're going to have colors in the garden, you're going to have shade with the trees, you're going to have the water feature, the patios, you're going to have the outdoor lighting. It's really going to be the best backyard package you'll ever see, and it's all courtesy of City Green Landscapes, featuring Barkman's Concrete Products. David Feek and City Green Landscapes create landscaping projects done right. More at citygreenlandscapes.com. Still a couple of weeks away from making our draw on this huge contest. Enter now, sportsnet.ca/960, and click on the contest page. One dragon has been slain, but there is at least one other huge dragon still to go for the Toronto Raptors. That's next on The Big Show. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The big insiders, the big controversies, the big debates. Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
So just for a second, can you imagine if the Toronto Raptors beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland tonight? Just picture it in your head. 2-2 series tie. Game 5 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Final goes tonight in Cleveland. We know Game 6 is going back to Toronto. Just imagine for a second the scene at the ACC in a few nights if the Raptors have the ability to win and advance to their first ever NBA Final. They're already 2 wins away from an NBA Final. And head coach Dwayne Casey and the Raptors, they've got all the momentum heading into Game 5 tonight.
We've got to make sure we keep our same focus and attention to detail. I don't want to say effort, because, again, both teams are playing hard. I thought we played hard in the first 2 games here. But the attention to detail, the little things, executing the little things, the little fundamentals that are really important in the heat of battle.
It's pretty amazing to think where the Raptors are. Like, the Toronto Raptors, the team that, you know, wore purple and had a dinosaur as their logo. And you know, with Vince Carter, they were a shot away from advancing. And they've had some good regular seasons. And then all of a sudden, you know, Chris Bosch spurned them for Miami. And, you know, Charles Oakley didn't want to play there because it was Canada. And, like, the Toronto Raptors are 2 wins away
from the NBA Finals, and now they head into Cleveland for Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight with this series tied at 2 games apiece. That, to me, is still amazing to wrap your head around, that the Raptors are actually in this position, and yet they still have a pretty huge dragon to slay because they got over one huge mountain. Well, right. I mean, they lost the first 2 games against Cleveland, and the Cavs had won 10 straight playoff games. They hadn't lost. They go to Toronto. They lose not once, but they lose twice. So Toronto's able to slay that dragon. They hand Cleveland their first loss and second loss of the postseason. But now they have to go into Cleveland and win a game. And that is the huge dragon that they still have to slay, because not only did they lose the first 2 games in Cleveland, and they got absolutely schooled in Game 1 and Game 2. And yeah, they've got the momentum, and yeah, they're feeling good about Game 3 and Game 4, but it's a different animal when you go the other way, and now they've got to win a game on the road, which they have not been able to do in this series to this point.
The one thing, too, that maybe the biggest difference between Games 1 and 2 and then Game 5 of this series, Pat, is if you look at the rest between the second round series and the second round sweep against the Atlanta Hawks to Game 1 against the Raptors, the Cavaliers had over a week off, and Toronto came right off of Game 7, a couple of nights rest, pretty much 48 hours after your Game 7 victory over Miami. You're in Cleveland to face a really good basketball team led by the best player in the game in LeBron James. So you're not really putting yourself in the best chance to succeed. They obviously get rolled by 31 in that first game. They lose by 19 in Game 2. And for Game 2, they looked a lot better. They hung with them for the most part in that first half until Cleveland went on that 16-2 run late in the second quarter to take a 14-point lead into the half and then, you know, take it home after that. But I wonder how much that rest played into it and why the Raptors were so far behind Cleveland in those first 2 games, because they were kind of still getting off that emotional high of beating Miami and going right into battle with Cleveland, where you didn't have a ton of time to prepare, whereas Cleveland was kind of sitting and waiting for more than a week.
Right.
And you just wonder how much that plays a factor, because during the regular season, the Raptors sure played the Cavaliers tight. And again, it's hard to believe, but the Raptors finished just one win less than Cleveland in the regular season. So, you know, they took the season series. They finished one game behind the regular season. It sure looked like a huge mismatch after Game 1 and 2. I was in that camp. I thought they were going to swept out of the building in Toronto. They won both games, and now here we are with the best of three upon us.
Are you feeling any different about Toronto's chances in this series? And obviously you are, because it's tied at 2, but are you feeling any different about the outcome of this series?
No, I still think Cleveland ends up doing it. Unfortunately for the Raptors, I just don't know if they have the horses to do it when it all comes down to it. I think that, you know, certainly at times we saw it, especially in Game 4, Raptors had a huge lead going into the first half, and just something about LeBron James, Pat, when he turns on that switch, it's something else.
Yeah.
And I just think that he's going to refuse to lose at this point. It's going to be hard to beat him. I certainly think they have a chance. It's a 2-2 series tie. But again, tonight to me is huge. If they lose tonight, it's over.
The problem for me is, as much as I want to see them win, the problem for me is that they've got to win twice in Cleveland. They got to win once, rather, in Cleveland, and they showed just. And I know that and I said it coming out of Game 1 and Game 2, they're capable of playing better than they played in the first 2 games, and they showed that in the second 2 games of this series. But it's just the concept of them having to win once in Cleveland, that is a difficult hump to get over. I'm not saying they can't do it, but I do think it's going to be a big mountain to climb. But again, just if you close your eyes for a second, if you thought that atmosphere in Game 4 was out of control at the ACC and it translated unreal on television, just imagine what a Game 6 atmosphere would be like if the Raptors have got an opportunity to advance to the NBA Final. That might be the most exciting part about tonight is I don't think Toronto's going to win tonight. I think Cleveland comes back and wins somewhat convincingly tonight. But if the Raptors are able to pull it off, and if the Raptors can take their first lead of this series and then come back for Game 6, it actually gives me goosebumps a little bit just thinking about it, because I think it'd be one of the coolest kind of moments that we've seen. And I'm not trying to call them Canada's team or anything like that, but I think it'd be one of the coolest moments we've seen in quite a while when it comes to sports in this country.
Yeah, and certainly I think the atmosphere is going to be off the charts regardless of the outcome tonight. But you're right, if they win, it just elevates that even more, because you got the chance to clinch the ticket to the NBA Finals. So it certainly is exciting, and I'm with I think that the Raptors, if they win tonight, gives themselves the best chance to win this series. If they lose tonight, I think this one could be over fairly quickly in terms of a series. I don't, you know, you might force a game seven, but yeah, you know, the fact that you have to win one in Cleveland, don't you think it's got to be game five, not game seven?
Yeah, I agree. Like, if there's going to be, I don't see the Raptors.
If you're
going to
beat them on their
seven,
home court, then it's got to be five and not seven.
Yeah, agreed. You think back to all the time that the Raptors have spent in this league, and I don't ever think the Raptors were a laughingstock team. Like, I don't ever think, like, the Grizzlies were a laughingstock team. Like, that just never worked, and the team was never really good. But I mean, yeah, the Raptors, Vince Carter eventually decided to move on. Now, he did re-sign the one time when everybody thought he wasn't going to re-sign. And, you know, the team that, you know, for the longest time, it was Damon Stoudemire and everybody else. And then Vince Carter arrived, and Vince Carter was the big reason. They made the playoffs a little bit. And, you know, Charles Oakley almost didn't re-sign there because didn't want to put his kids through Canadian schools, and eventually did re-sign there. But they were never able to get over that hump. And then, you know, for the longest time, they Tracy McGrady didn't want to stay there, and he went and signed elsewhere. And Chris Bosh decided to go to form the big three, and he won titles in Miami. And like, geez, is it ever going to happen for the Raptors? And everybody has picked against them the entire way through this postseason. And, you know, Stephen A. Smith came out and apologized to Canada, and Kornheiser and Wilbon were choosing against the Raptors in the first round against the Pacers. It's just amazing to think this team is two wins away from an NBA final. And yet, it's still a long, long way away for them getting to an NBA final, because they've got to beat Cleveland at least once at home and got to beat them twice more. And that is not going to be an easy thing to do, because they were the team in the NBA final last year.
Regardless of what happens, it's been a huge success for the Raptors.
It's a really, and I think the fact they get the three home games in the Eastern Conference final is awesome. And regardless of what happens tonight, I can't wait till game six. By the way, tip off tonight, 6:30 in Cleveland, the Cavs and the Raptors. So here's the understatement of the day. Steph Curry and the Warriors are maybe in a little bit of trouble.
The series isn't over. And in our locker room, it's obviously frustration. You know, trying to figure out how we can get back to being ourselves. And we have an opportunity to do that on Thursday.
You want to play the imagine game. Imagine the cold sweats that the NBA front office is having right now, and knowing that they don't have to squint too hard to be able to see a Toronto-Oklahoma City NBA final. You want to talk about a ratings disaster.
Where the Raptors
in
would
the
have
NBA,
home court. By
where
the way.
The Raptors would have home court. Like, just think about the ratings disaster that Oklahoma City and Toronto might be for the NBA. It'd be great in Canada. It would be awesome. They don't care about Canadian ratings. There's one team in Canada. How many people are watching Oklahoma? Oklahoma City is one of the smallest markets in the NBA, and then you've got the only Canadian market in the NBA. How many people are watching the NBA finals?
Golden State's pretty small too, right? And they had a great season, but they're a pretty small market in Oakland. And then you look at, you know, if LeBron James isn't in it, period, I think it's gonna be tough for you know, ratings wise in the States. But you're right. I mean, you look at the Oklahoma City Raptors matchup. Oh boy!
Like, you've got here, you have the,
because with the Golden State, they're a small market, but you still have the 73-9.
Well, exactly.
Great year,
and
you've got
you
Steph
have
Curry,
the rematch yeah. of last year's NBA Finals,
well, I mean,
and LeBron.
Even if it was Golden State and Toronto, though, you'd have a little bit better ratings than Oklahoma City, Toronto.
That's
because
true.
You still have Steph Curry, your MVP. You still got a team that was 73-9. You still got the Raptors, who defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers at that point and knocked off LeBron James. So it wouldn't be as bad as Oklahoma City, Toronto. But you're right. I mean, the NBA office is probably just sitting there, sitting nice and tight, hoping that
they're like, come on. And the worst part is, us saying that is just going to fuel more of the, well, the refs are out to get the Raptors because they want the Cavaliers in the NBA final.
Well, the refs are out to get there.
Don't get me started on that again. Oh, well, every call goes against the Raptors, and everything that gets called, we're gonna, like,
well, Pat, they had zero foul shots in the first half.
Could you just lay off on Twitter? Can we just watch the game and appreciate the game as opposed to everything being against the Toronto Raptors? I kind of hope that we see the Raptors in Oklahoma City, just because I think it would be a fascinating study to see what the ratings ended up being in the United States. Like, I don't even know, who is it, TNT or is it ABC, ESPN? I don't even know who has the national rights off the top of my head. I think it's ESPN who's got them in the NBA for the NBA Finals. Like, they're going to be banging their head against the wall.
TNT and ABC, I think.
TNT and ABC split them? They're going to bang their heads against the wall. Like, What are we doing broadcasting Toronto and Oklahoma City in the NBA Finals? And here's the toughest part to wrap my head around about the Western Conference Final in the NBA. In a league where there are never playoff upsets, in a league where, by and large, the top seed always beats the bottom seed, you've got the team that maybe was the most overwhelming favorite in years, a team that went 73-9, and they're down 3-1 in the Western Conference Final. That is the most surprising part of all of this. Not only that Oklahoma City's been able to push Golden State here, but the fact that this league never sees upsets. You never see teams that are that good beaten by teams that are below them. It just doesn't happen in the NBA, and yet here you are with Golden State down 3-1, facing elimination, and very likely not going back to defend their title. And I know Steph Curry's hurt and playing through stuff. I know all that, but it's still amazing to me to think that that's the case right now.
Well, and certainly you look at the Golden State Warriors, 73-9, as you mentioned, and you go back to the end of the season there, where we were talking about, you know, the kind of reaching for that Bulls record of 72, right? And Scottie Pippen and all those Bulls greats came out and said, it means nothing without a title. Well, here you are, and the Golden State Warriors might not have a title. So, Pat, I guess, you know, how do you look at this Golden State Warriors team if they don't end up getting to that NBA Finals? Like, they're not even, never mind winning the title, they're not even going to make it to the Final Two. And you wonder, I mean, how much...
I mean, they might still be able to, but you don't see 3-1 series leads eradicated very often.
I think they're
done. I do, too. I mean, and OKC won both their games at home. They've already won once in Oakland. So, I mean, you don't see 3-1 series leads go by the wayside in the NBA. It happens even more rare than it happens in the NHL. So right now, this looks like it's done for Golden State. And to answer your question, I'm with Steph Curry. I'm with the group that said, hey, it means nothing unless they win a title. That's great. You go 73-9. That's outstanding. Detroit Red Wings ended up winning 62 games in 1 year. Didn't win a Stanley Cup. You look back and say, it's a great regular season.
Nobody remembers the 62 wins.
Exactly. Yeah. So where's your Stanley Cup? If you're going to go 73-9, you better at least make it to the NBA Final. But you're going to potentially be out in 5 at the hands of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and an Oklahoma City Thunder that is, you know, a lower seed or had fewer points than the two teams still playing in the Eastern Conference. So it's amazing to think that's the case right now. I'm stunned by that.
And nothing against Oklahoma City. They're still a great team with some tremendous talent in Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But you're right. I mean, they're kind of the fourth of the four remaining teams in the NBA when it comes to regular season records, because they would have the least, they will not have home court regardless of what happens in the East. But yeah, I mean, you feel bad for the Golden State Warriors because they are banged up and injured, like you mentioned. But again, 73-9. Might not even make it to the Final Two. It's pretty incredible.
A couple texts. You don't see 3-1 series comebacks very often in the NBA, but you see 73 win teams even less. Fair point. If there's going to be a team that erases a 3-1 series deficit, it's probably going to be this Golden State Warriors team. If there's going to be a group that makes it all the way back, it's going to be them. Toronto OKC in the NBA is basically Tampa San Jose in hockey, which could easily happen and would be a ratings disaster. Although, in the NHL, U.S. ratings, they don't fluctuate that wildly. I mean, if you've got a Chicago in, if you've got a New York in, if you've got an LA in, they'll bump them up a little bit. But the Tampa San Jose in the U.S. isn't going to mess with the ratings the same way.
Well, I would disagree, because I think Pittsburgh San Jose would be more enticing in the States than San Jose.
But Tampa. You go back and you take a look at the ratings. They don't fluctuate year to year that much in the NHL finals, in the Stanley Cup finals. You don't see them fluctuate that much. So
now, is that because there's less interest south of the border?
Yes, it's still a niche sport there. Yeah. I mean, so it's not, whereas the NBA is a much bigger deal. The NBA finals are a much bigger deal. And if you've got a Canadian team and one of the smallest markets playing in the NBA finals, that's going to do more damage to the NBA's ratings in the States than Tampa San Jose will do in the NHL. Where it would be felt is in Canada. If we end up seeing Tampa San Jose, we might very well see Tampa San Jose, because in this country, if you don't have Crosby playing, I think that takes a pretty big bite out of the luster. San Jose, St. Louis, it's kind of up in the air. I don't think it makes much of a difference, but you lose the Crosby element, you lose the Penguins element to the mix. I think it does take a hit out of the Stanley Cup final ratings, which are already going to be lower than we've seen in a long, long time, because there's been no Canadian teams throughout the entire postseason.
Golden State could be the undefeated Patriots losing to the Giants, except at least Tom Brady made the final. It's good comparison. I mean, it's hard to compare anything to an undefeated team, but in the way that, you know, the Patriots were the underwhelming favorites and ended up losing.
Yeah. Screw the NBA, go Raptors. And to be fair, the Raptors fans and their conspiracy theories are nowhere near on the same level of Vancouver Canucks fans, which is probably fair. Tomorrow, we're live on location for the big show and Hockey Central at noon at Heritage Point Golf Tournament for the annual Calgary Flames Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. Always outstanding. Hopefully the weather is like today. Hopefully we see good weather tomorrow.
60% chance.
I know. Every year that's the case with the Masters Alumni Alumni Masters Golf Tournament. Since 1994, the Flames Alumni Masters Tournament has raised over $2.3 million for charity. This year, proceeds go to support cerebral palsy kids and families in Calgary. Looking forward to being out at Heritage Point tomorrow between noon and 6. Well, the Blue Jays have been awful at the plate. But when should we really start being worried about that? Our MLB insider, Dan Shulman, weighing in on that around the corner. He joins us a day early here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking Blue Jays right now. The Big Show, Sportsnet 960.
He's Will. I'm Pat. Big Show continues on this Wednesday afternoon, and the Toronto Blue Jays continue their set with the New York Yankees this evening after a 6-0 loss last night. Yankees are red hot, but what hasn't been so hot is the Blue Jays at the plate. Welcome back to the program. Very happy to welcome in our Major League Baseball insider, Dan Shulman, who joins us usually on Thursdays, but with an afternoon Jays game tomorrow, pushback today. Dan, appreciate you accommodating us still. Thank you so much for that. And another night last night where the Jays struggle at the plate. Two hits, seven base runners, just a rough night again. How much longer until this becomes a major concern for the Blue Jays, or are we at that point already?
I think they're at that point already. I mean, this is a pivotal stretch they're in right now. They play the Yankees, then they go home, play the Red Sox, play the Yankees again, then they go to Fenway, play the Red Sox again. They got some series with the Orioles coming up. I think it's already a major concern. They're dead last in the majors in batting average with runners in scoring position. They were first in baseball last year. They're last in baseball this year in that category. And I think management and the players are very concerned. They've activated Devin Travis, so he's in the lineup tonight, looking maybe to get a spark from him. Also, Troy Tulowitzki's out a couple of days, it looks like, with that quad injury. But that's just one guy, and you don't want to assume that he's going to be a savior or anything like that. He needs a little time to get his timing back at the major league level. They just need the guys with track records to hit like they've hit over the last few years, and right now most of them aren't doing that.
Let's start with Travis, who does return tonight. You're right, don't want to put too much pressure on him and call him the savior, but how much of a potential is there that he can be a spark in this lineup?
Well, I think it's possible, but again, he's hardly played in a year, so I think they have to wait and see what he looks like against major league pitching. He's batting eighth tonight. John Gibbons just said about 20 minutes ago in his office, if he swings the bat well for a couple of days, then they'll consider moving him back up to the top of the lineup where he was last year before he got hurt. I think, the Bautista leadoff thing, it was a change generated to, maybe change their luck a little bit. It really hasn't seemed to have that much of an effect. They hit a little bit better in Minnesota, but Minnesota's the worst team in the American League right now. So, I think with Travis, they want to wait and see how he does for a couple of days. It looks like with Tulowitzki out, Travis will get a chance to play consecutive days, 2-3 days in a row, whether it's righties or lefties doesn't seem to matter. And if he's swinging the bat well, I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that he'll be leading off pretty soon.
And you mentioned Troy Tulowitzki out for at least a couple of games. How much of a hole does that leave if this lingers a little bit longer?
Well, I think Ryan Goins, he's a natural shortstop, and I think he's a great defensive player. So I really don't think they lose much there. If this is vintage Troy Tulowitzki offensively, then obviously they lose a lot. But if Devin Travis can do offensively what Troy Tulowitzki's been doing, then they don't lose much. But again, it could just be a couple of days. And there's a lot up in the air in the middle infield right now. How long until Tulowitzki comes back? How well does Goins play short? How well does Travis swing the bat? What's Barney's role now? So they're kind of in a state of flux at those two positions. And I think the players will determine the lineup. If Travis hits, he's going to play. And if Travis hits, then eventually it'll be Travis at second and Tulowitzki at short. Mm-hmm. If Tulowitzki needs a while, or if Travis doesn't hit, then Goins and possibly Barney both still get some playing time.
You mentioned the name Bautista. Jose Bautista has his one-game suspension appeal tomorrow. It is just one game, but what's your feel? Do you think the league upholds that one-game suspension?
I think they probably do. I thought their comments were kind of vague in terms of why he got suspended. You know, part of it was for post-game comments, and I don't think he said anything inflammatory in the post-game comments. I don't think he should have been suspended, but I'm not sure they're going to overturn this one. And I guess we'll find out tomorrow morning. And if they do uphold it, then he's going to sit out the game here tomorrow. But I don't like their chances of getting it reduced, although I think they've got a pretty good case. I would just like to hear baseball say, here's exactly what he did that got him suspended, because I don't think the slide was worthy of his the punishment for the slide is Smoke was called out on the double play, and they did that. So I think they already were penalized for the slide. You know, he got up and he glared at Odor, and Odor glared at him. And then Odor shoved him in the chest, and then Bautista cocked his fist, and then Odor hit him in the jaw. So I don't think that really anything, you know, a little thing here, a little thing there, and they add it up to a one-game suspension, it kind of doesn't make sense for me.
He is Dan Shulman from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and Sportsnet Blue Jays Baseball joining us here on the big show this afternoon. Will?
Well, Dan, the team the Blue Jays are playing tonight is the New York Yankees. They're red hot right now, 6 wins in a row, 8 of the last 10, they came out victorious. Your thoughts on the Yankees? Are they maybe turning things around a little bit? And if so, why?
Well, why they've won 6 in a row is their starting pitching has been fantastic. So they've had, over the last 6 games, their starter's ERA is under 2. You're going to win a lot of games when you pitch that well. And as we all know now that Aroldis Chapman is back, came back on May the 9th with Betances, Miller, and Chapman. If they're leading after 6 innings, good luck trying to beat them. But I don't think their starting pitching can sustain this. I think they're just on a really good run right now. You know, Pineda's got a history of being inconsistent. Can Sabathia keep delivering good starts? What's Nova going to be like? Evaldi's a hot and cold kind of guy, although he looks like he's pitching better lately. I think they're playing a little bit out over their skis right now because of the starting pitching. So, you know, teams have runs. Good teams have runs. Bad teams have runs. I think the Yankees are an average team. And for them to be good, in addition to good starting pitching, they're going to need A-Rod, who it looks like he's going to be back tomorrow. They're going to need him to hit. They're going to need Teixeira to hit. You know, Beltran's been crazy hot recently. Nobody stays as hot as Beltran has been. They're going to need these older guys to do reasonably well for them to be a good team. I think they're a decent team, but I don't think they're a playoff team.
The Red Sox are pacing the AL East right now with a 28-17 record. All that pretty much thanks to the amazing streak from Jackie Bradley Jr., who extended it to 28 games yesterday with a double off the wall. He's now halfway to DiMaggio's streak of 56. And I guess just maybe a thought or two on his streak, Dan, is because he's 2 games away from 30, a mark that the major leagues hasn't seen since 2011.
Yeah, it's amazing. If before the season, if you had said to me or anybody who, you know, follows baseball on a regular basis, you know, pick 100 guys who could have a hitting streak of this length, I don't know that Jackie Bradley Jr. gets mentioned, but it is amazing. Red Sox people say that he's being much more aggressive. If he gets a good first pitch fastball, he's swinging at it instead of getting himself into 2 strike counts. Obviously, confidence is a big part of this. He had a stretch last year, not for this long, but where he hit like this. And then he went ice cold after that. And that's always been his MO, is to be a really streaky guy. It also helps, you know, Ortiz is hitting like crazy, Bogarts and Betts. And they got so many offensive weapons in that lineup. It must feel to Bradley like he's always coming up with a couple of men on base and there's nowhere to put them. They're throwing him strikes and he's hitting them. You know, he'll come back down to a level somewhat below this, but I think they've got a good player on their hands. I think Jackie Bradley's really turned a corner and is going to be a very productive player for them.
Matt Harvey's had a rough 2016 with the New York Mets. He suffered his league-leading 7th loss of the year yesterday. His ERA is now over 6, and he's allowed a league-leading 73 hits as well this season. Where are you on Matt Harvey, and are these struggles a bit of a concern for you?
Big concern. I mean, Matt Harvey, who for the first couple of years, you know, the Dark Knight and the Mystique and all that stuff, he loved that role. And now he looks into the cameras and he says, I don't know what's wrong and the ball doesn't feel right coming out of my hand and I can't figure out how to fix it. And he's searching. He's really searching for answers right now. He threw a pitch 97 yesterday and he was consistently 94, 95. And I don't know if it's too many innings coming off Tommy John surgery, that he threw too many innings last year with the run to the playoffs. That could be it. You know, sometimes when a pitcher's arm isn't right, it's not just the velocity goes down. Sometimes the velocity is pretty close to normal, but they lose their feel. They lose their command. He gave up 2 home runs on changeups yesterday that just kind of hung over the plate. It's not a pitch that he throws all that often. He's searching for it right now. And You know, when a guy like Harvey or earlier in his career, Steven Strasburg, like these guys never struggled their whole life until they get to the majors. I think it's better when you struggle in the minors or college or high school or wherever, and you have to figure some stuff out. It's tough to figure stuff out for the first time at the major league level, and I think that's what Harvey's going through right now.
Last one for me. Yu Darvish is set to make his season debut on Saturday. They've announced the pitch count cap at 90. He hasn't pitched in the big league since 2014. Just maybe a tough one to answer, but Dan, your thoughts on Yu Darvish as he makes his way back from Tommy John surgery?
It's a huge pickup for Texas. I mean, eventually, if he's healthy and pitching well, he'll get up over 100 pitches. And you know, you talk about him and Cole Hamels at the top of a rotation on what's already a very good team. This is big for Texas. And I don't see any reason, especially because they're monitoring the pitch count. With the way Darvish, the number of different pitches he can throw and the command that he has, he doesn't need to overpower people to be good. And I think he can kind of, you know, feel his way back into this. And they're a good team in a division along with Seattle, but it looks like they're starting to distance themselves from some of the other teams. I think they can afford to go a little bit slowly with him and just ease him back into the rotation and into a normal pitch count. I think this is a very big thing for Texas.
Dan Shulman's with us from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and Sportsnet Blue Jays Baseball. One more for you, Dan. It's the Dodgers and the Mets on Sunday Night Baseball this week, just to set us up for what we might see come Sunday night.
Well, as a broadcaster, we're awfully, our crew, we're all awfully excited that Clayton Kershaw is going to be pitching in that game. So that's, they're going to be talk about, obviously. Yeah, he's not bad. He's okay. You know, if you like, 95 strikeouts and 5 walks.
If you like strikeouts, he's pretty good.
Three Cy Youngs, it's pretty good. So, we're awfully excited about it. He's the, you know, the top pitcher of his generation or however you want to say it. And if his next 8-9 years are healthy and anything like his last 8-9 years, he's going to go down as one of the very best pitchers in baseball history. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And on the other side, Bartolo Colon goes for the Mets, and that's always entertaining. You never know what you're going to get, whether it'll be a basket catch or a home run. Or, but you know what? 43 years of age, 285 pounds is what he's listed at, and pounds the strike zone with his fastball and says, here it is, hit it, I dare you. And I admire him, and he's fun to watch, and I'm looking forward to it.
Dan, thank you so much for coming on a day early, and thank you so much for the time, as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys, you got it.
Dan Shulman from ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and Sportsnet Blue Jays Baseball joining us here on the Big Show. Yeah,
he's right, though. Bartolo Colon, you really don't know what you're going to get.
285
And like Dan said, that's what he's listed at. Could be more.
Holy cow.
Could be more.
He's a cartoon character. Oh, it's amazing. You got Bartolo going up against the very best. And right now what Clayton Kershaw doing is cartoon-like. It's like comic book stuff. Like 95-5 is what we're seeing right now for Clayton Kershaw. So that's Sunday Night Baseball. Mets and the Dodgers tonight. The Blue Jays and the Yankees. And it's I'm with them. Like, now is the time to be concerned. That's another two-hit game against the Yankees team that, yes, they've won 7 in a row, but a Yankees team that is also below 500 and a Yankees team that is, you know, right now not fighting near the top of the American League East. You should be hitting more than twice. You should be getting more than 7 base runners last night. And again, this team and how anemic they've been, it is startling, and it's no longer, hey, that's fine, it'll figure itself out. Like, okay, if it'll figure itself out, figure it out. Like, this is concerning at this point.
Well, and as Dan said, I mean, the biggest issue with the whole thing right now, when you look at the sample size of Blue Jays, I mean, for the most part, every single guy who is struggling right now on the roster has an incredible track record of hitting.
Yep.
And that is the most concerning part, because they kind of just fell off a cliff, and who knows where it came from. I mean, spring training, you look at their stats, pretty good. They came back north to Toronto, and the bats just didn't come with them. And certainly when you're dead last in the major leagues in runners in scoring position, or sorry, average with runners in scoring position, in a place
that's
where you were first in that spot last year. Now you're dead last in the major leagues.
And I know last year is last year. I get that. But last year, R.A. Dickey gives you 4-run ball, you probably have a 50% chance of winning with what that offense could do last year. This year, you give up 4 runs, it's like, good luck. Like, you're going to need to really squeak one out. And that was no chance motel for the Blue Jays last night, because they could not hit once again. Bautista and Tulowitzki, the only two guys who hit last night, they got 7 runners, period. Just it's no longer the it's fine, it'll figure itself out, these guys are too good. Like, we're 2 months into the season now. It's getting on 2 months into the season.
Yeah, 5 days away from 2 months.
It's time to figure it out if you're the Toronto Blue Jays. absolutely it's concerning right now.
Scores. Seven-line Army in right field might tear this ballpark down. Cologne carried his bat with him until he was about 10 feet from first base. He's taking the slowest home run trot you've ever seen.
285 pounds.
Give him a break.
And, like, I know what he looks like, and then Dan says it, you're like, 285 pounds. Goodness gracious.
He's taking the slowest home run trot you've ever seen.
Bottom eight, Cubs lead the Cardinals 9-8. Texas has got a 13-6 lead on the Angels, bottom seven. Top nine, Cleveland leads the White Sox 4-3, and the Giants have got a 1-0 lead on the Padres. That game in the bottom of the fifth. He's Will. I'm Pat. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960. And did we get any update yesterday on Calgary's coaching staff? Any update at all? That's next as we continue here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.